especially given today's business climate. Isn't it true that now more than ever we need to be thinking creatively about every aspect of our lives and our careers and our business? So without further ado, let's welcome Greg Fraley.
Thanks, Doug. Really appreciate that. By the way, in the interest of full disclosure, I want you to know that I'm trying to persuade you with subliminal message on my slide. Have you spotted it yet?
Yes.
So now that I've told you, it's no longer subliminal, so you can't sue me. All right, moving along. This is going to be a very fast-paced presentation today, and I'm not going to be able to go into the kind of detail that I normally would with this, but I hope to give you some ideas for innovation, using your imagination, doing better idea generation, using more structured problem solving, and doing more deliberate and formal innovation. And I have a concept called holistic innovation, which is what I'm going to talk about today. Apologize in advance if I offend anybody. Is anybody from Motorola here? Good. I love Motorola, but I will be saying some interesting things about them, and not because I don't love them, because I love them. Tough love, call it. So, you know, I'm going to start today by saying some things that I hope are at least somewhat inspirational. I believe very firmly that capitalism is not dead. We've got troubles right now in River City, but we will get through all this, and this is a great time, actually, to be in business. And you have to look at what's going on right now, not as a problem, but as an opportunity. To quote Woody Norris, and if you don't know who Woody Norris is, you should look him up on the web and see his TED 15-minute talk. He's an amazing inventor. He invented the personal helicopter as an example of one thing he did. And he invented that first arm that goes across records, that goes this way instead of the normal way it used to. He's invented like 45 things, but he said this recently in his TED talk, so I want to attribute that. He said 99% of everything hasn't been invented yet. Isn't that an empowering thing to think about? Mm-hmm. Everything is still in front of us. Think about what's happened, and I'm 56. Think about what's happened in my lifetime. Back in the 70s, when I was in college, people were saying, oh, America's a third-rate economic power. We're going downhill. We're going to be number 6 or 7 pretty soon, blah, 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 blah. And professors were saying this, not just normal people who are just afraid, but professors of economics and business were saying it's pretty much over for us in terms of being the world leader in the economic development and so forth. In the 70s, guess what? The computer was invented, the PC was invented, and everything changed. And guess what? It's going to happen again. Everything is going to change again and again and again. So 99% of everything isn't invented yet. Most innovation is a reaction to crisis. And the bigger your company is, the more likely it is that it takes a crisis to even have innovation. That's the sad news, but true news. So the good news about the crisis is it's going to light a fire under a lot of people's behinds to get going and start innovating. The time is now. So is this an opportunity or what? This is one of the biggest crises we've had in our economy in years. Many years, and you know, if you listen to the news, I just turn it off now because it's so depressing. But there's good news in this, because guess what? We are going to get through this. It is going to end at some point. And the people that are innovating right now and are putting those programs in place right now and are going out there and aggressively trying to take market share or get into new markets, those are the people who are going to come out at the end of this smelling like a rose. I got up this morning in Lincoln Park, went out into the rain, and had to pull this flyer off my windshield. And I thought I'd bring it in to just share it with you just briefly, because you know what? This guy is going to survive this recession. Diversi and Racine Shell Auto Repair. And he does alternators, brakes, fuel pumps, jump services. He does a lot of different stuff. He's got it all down here, and he's 10% off with this flyer. If anybody needs a repair, please come up and pick up the flyer for their discount. See, I'm providing value right away.
But seriously, in a microcosm, this is what we should all be doing. We should all be looking for ways to reinvent, to reignite, to refire our innovation efforts. Companies that started during the Great Depression, and most of these are local, with the exception of Texas Instruments. Motorola technically started a year before everything went to hell in a handbasket in 1929, but really their business developed in the Depression. And Motorola is a very interesting story. But Allstate, who, by the way, is doing some really interesting PR and marketing right now, you should take a look at what they're doing, because they're aligning their advertising and marketing right now to the feelings of their customers, and it's very reassuring. It's very nice. But these companies have done all right. They started in the middle of the Depression. And by the way, what I would encourage you to do throughout my presentation today is just write down ideas instead of taking notes. So if you get ideas for things you can do in your business or with your own business or whatever it is, just write down those ideas, because I can send you the slides, okay? So the content is available. In fact, there's an article that backs this presentation up that's sort of got all the detail that I won't be able to get into today. So I can send you the slides and the article, and you'll have all the detail that you want. So let this be about some ideas for you. I'm big into this new technology called Twitter, and I've got a panel of about 1,700 people that I ask questions to all the time, and that's what I use Twitter for. It's not just the microblogging where you say what you're doing now. I'm going down to the store to buy some gum. People do that, but it's also an interesting sort of market research tool for me, because I can get a quick take on things. And so I ask the question, who's consistently innovative out there? And this is the answers that my followers and Twitter gave me. Some obvious ones, Google, Apple, very obvious. 3M, IBM, Dyson, and then, there's some that I wouldn't have suspected, like Rubbermaid. I don't think of Rubbermaid as a particularly innovative company, so, and then again, they've been around forever, and so I queried the person who sent me the Rubbermaid comment, and I said, why? And they said, because they're coming up with something new every season, and it's always relevant, and it always works. And so, okay, I'll go with that, Rubbermaid. And then there was some, like, beyond who's consistently innovative, who are some companies that are sort of doing some really interesting things right now? And some companies I've never even heard of. FreshBooks looks like a real interesting venture because they do painless invoicing for people. And it's just like they take the invoicing thing off your back. And it sounds like it's the Intuit of invoicing, if you will. This Leon restaurant, so I'm now living in near London in England, and this is a small restaurant chain that actually does, like, really high-quality fast food. Mm-hmm. Isn't that an interesting concept? Like, it's, like, really good food. And it's fast. And it's not expensive. And so, like, they're reinventing fast food. So Twitter and some of those others are doing some interesting things. And they're doing it now. No one mentioned Microsoft. Out of 1,800 people, no one even mentioned Microsoft. And I think that's an oversight, frankly, because say what you will about Microsoft, and you can say a lot of nasty things about them, you have to admit they've been pretty consistently innovative and pretty consistently successful. Now, are they as cool as Max? No, but that's another step. That's another question. Motorola should have been mentioned as well, but there's reasons they weren't, and I'm going to talk about that a little more. Oracle wasn't mentioned, even though they're a juggernaut, really, in technology. Southwest Air, again, they're consistently innovative in their market space, or any bank. No bank was mentioned at all. And you know what? They deserve it.
I want to disagree with that.
Go ahead.
Bank of America's Keep the Change program was masterful in generating deposits in a time when deposits and getting deposits was a huge issue. Cheap capital for banks.
Who was that again?
Bank of America.
Okay.
But interestingly enough, Bank of America didn't come up with that. It was actually developed. Consulting firm that I was involved with Wells Fargo, Wells Fargo couldn't see that it was interesting enough to follow it. They dumped it, and someone took it over.
See, you took the words out of my mouth. Out of my mouth, because I was going to mention Wells Fargo is actually pretty innovative.
Much more innovative as a culture, but they tend to dump things a lot. And Bank of America kind of looks at their garbage on a regular basis.
You guys come up here, I'm going to sit down. And I'm not saying there are no banks that are innovative. This is just the responses from my little sort of off-the-cuff market research survey. There's plenty of innovative banks. LaSalle Bank has some interesting things, particularly in their massive capital group. I forget the name.
They don't exist anymore, though.
Right.
Oh, all right. Tears in my eyes, I guess. Exemplar of what I think everyone should be doing is they should take their core expertise and go into adjacent markets, disruptive innovation, if you will. And I think Virgin is the perfect example of someone who's taken what was once just a little record company and made something much bigger out of it, but all leveraging off that original brand identity and that brand strength. And guess what? Virgin does it right, as far as I'm concerned. I took a flight on Virgin from London to South Africa, and it was the first time I'd been on a Virgin flight. And frankly, I was amazed. Like, they actually treated you really nice. The food was respectably good. And, like, the technology behind the seat for you know, television and movies and stuff was about 10 times better than anything else that I'd seen to that date. So I said, Virgin is an interesting travel experience. So there's a reason they're successful. They do what they do well. Innovation. Well, let's get down to cases here, since I've got, like, 20 minutes left before Q&A. If it were easy, everybody would do it. Innovation is not easy. Innovation is complicated. I think it's best viewed as a complex problem, or if you don't like the word problem, a complex challenge. But it is complex. I'm going to talk about how to cope with that complexity today. And my answer, the short answer, this is like the, I could leave after saying this, but you wouldn't know why I said it. But if you do it, you'd be okay. Innovation is a holistic process. It has to be part of each and everything that you do in an organization. It can't be, there's no silver bullet for innovation. There's no one process. There's no one kind of person. There's not one kind of leadership. There's not a particular kind of idea generation process. It's all of those things. All those things. And you have to work on all those things all the time in order to be innovative all the time. And I put those logos up there for a reason, because I'm going to compare and contrast a little bit between Apple and Motorola. So innovation is about being innovative, not about doing innovation. Innovation isn't something you set up a meeting for and then you organize something and then you sort of forget it after that. It's something you have to do each and every day. So you have to be it, not do it. One big difference between Motorola and Apple, right there. By the way, could anyone name the CEO of Motorola?
Greg Brown.
Okay.
There's two.
There's a co, isn't there?
That's Sanjay right. Something is the other one.
Yes, and he's been the CEO for 8 months, maybe. So give the man a chance. You know, he may end up doing very well. But at this point in time, it's interesting to compare and contrast Motorola, because with the iPhone, well, by the way, Motorola has lost about $3 billion in revenue on their mobile phone business. And Apple has gained about $3 billion in revenue from the iPhone. It's almost like they took it off one entry off this balance sheet and put it on the other. And it could have been Motorola, because they were almost there first. In fact, they were there first in many ways. And I'm not saying Apple's perfect, by the way. Apple was not perfect. Apple, good company, very innovative. They screw up, too. This is one example. Do you folks remember the Apple Newton? I invested millions of investor capital in developing a physician application for the Apple Newton, and then more or less the product was dropped. And the Apple Newton did everything, and it was going to be John Sculley's stamp on Apple and all that good stuff. And at the end of the day, it was too many features, too heavy, and what really took the market by storm was the Palm Pilot, which U.S. Robotics here in Chicago did, because it did a couple things very well. And you could put it in your shirt pocket. And that's what consumers wanted. So Apple wasn't listening to the market. They were being tech weenies who were doing cool stuff. Sometimes that works out, sometimes it doesn't. Motorola has a wonderful story. I love the company because they did start in the Depression. And the story of the two Galvins that are pictured there, the elder Galvin had some kind of a power product for taking radios, and it was like a power transformer. I can't remember exactly. But the market for it sort of went out the window overnight. But somebody in his building was doing some interesting things. And he got together, and he came up with the idea of putting a radio in a car. So they figured out how to do it. They had the technology. They were engineers. They were engineering-type guys. And they didn't even have enough money to participate in the next, like, car trade show. So one of the Galvins took that truck or something just like it, where the radio had been installed, parked it outside of the convention center in Atlantic City, and turned the radio on. And that was their entry, their first marketing effort. And it all went uphill from there. And it was because of their vision and their dedication to that interesting technology that they did so well over the years. I mean, Motorola is an interesting company because they've got resources like crazy. I mean, they have some of the best engineers in the world working for that company. They could be, and they will be again, I predict, a juggernaut in some particular market. But why can't they consistently innovate? Why don't they always be on top? Or you know, sort of ride from wave to wave like it seems like Apple does? And I have an answer for that. It is, I think they have incidental innovation. It's an indication where something's right and something's wrong. The Razr was a big success. When it first came out, it took the market by storm, and it was going to be the next big cell phone, and it was for about a year, year and a half. And then it sort of got into featureitis, and sort of instead of looking for the next big leap in mobile phone technology, they got into featureitis, and they're still after it with the Razr. They've got a Dolce and Gabbana Razr, gold-plated Razr. They've got, like, a cool pink one, and, like, okay, you know, enough with the line extension. How about inventing something new and different, you know? And that's why they're not doing so well. Okay, moving fast forward through this presentation. How do you cope with the complexity of innovation? How do you become a holistic, innovative organization? And in my view, you work with something called 4 P's, and it has to be a continuous process in working with these 4 P's. So the 4 P's are people, oops, come back here. People, products, process, and press, which is a goofy word that means really culture or environment. But culture, environment aren't a P, so it wouldn't work. So it's press. It's that which presses upon you. The culture, you see. Okay, moving along. People. Okay. Observations about how important people are in your organization if you want innovation. Who knows who Jonathan Ive is? I'll tell you in a moment. Does anyone know who Michael Curtin is? I'll tell you in a moment. I'll also make the remark that training matters, and the question of what is CPS is something I'll also explain, but it's about a process you should train people in. And I'll also say practice matters. And I.O. stands for, I'll cut to the chase, it's Improv Olympics. So spontaneity matters as well. So saying more about people, let me move forward. Jonathan Ive is the guy who designed the iPhone and the iPod. And he's a British guy who moved to California, and Steve Jobs, there again, people, leadership, saw his talent and turned him loose. Now, when this guy worked for John Sculley, who was the former CEO of Apple, he was no big star because he wasn't given license to do the kind of designs that he wanted to do. So he wasn't empowered, essentially. And when you think about how important design is, this guy single-handedly, with his design, created probably the most distinctive-looking product in, I don't know, the last 10 or 15 years. And it's meaningful because not only does the iPod or and the iPhone work well, they are decent as phones and as music players, but they're cool. And it's the cool factor that puts them in a different space than Motorola, as another compare and contrast. The Razr was cool, but it didn't remain cool. It didn't continue. So design is key. Michael Curtin is a theorist of creativity. By the way, creativity can be taught. Creativity can be measured. And this is the guy who teaches, who figured out how to measure a person's creative style. And he came up with a theory of the adapter innovator. And there's a scale of adapter to innovator. If you're an adapter, you're a detail person, and you think better, think improving things. If you're an innovator, you're a big picture thinker, conceptual thinker, and you think different. And so there's a scale, a bell curve, and everybody falls somewhere on that scale. It doesn't mean you're not creative, by the way, if they say you're an adapter. It just means you're creative in a different way. And his theory is, and he's proved this by the studies he's done, the consulting he's done over the years, the best innovation teams are diverse teams when it comes to thinking skills and thinking styles.
I know that 3M uses this Kai method, and I'm sure there are many other organizations that do it as well. But out on those tails are two different styles. One is make it better, and the other one is make something new. So
that's
different
right.
ways of approaching innovation, and hence the desire to have, you know, a diverse team. Because the make it better is the more incremental improvement, continuous quality, advancement, and so on. The others are sort of, let's jump the curve, let's go to the next generation.
That is exactly right. Thank you. And there are many organizations that use Kai. And it is better on one end of the scale and different on the other, and then a blend throughout. And what tends to happen on innovation teams, when even organizations, is organizations tend to hire people like themselves. And so over time, whichever end of the scale they're on, it tends to get more so that way. I guess I'm not talking out of school when I say Johnsonville Sausage, one of my clients who I've done the KAI for, basically the owner of the company is like here, like he actually is kind of off that way. And then, of course, the VP of marketing is here, and finance and so forth. And like most of the team is over there. And they're a highly innovative company in terms of what they do. Then there's other bureaucratic organizations that like really like people who are good planners and that sort of thing. And so over time, they hire people and they end up with a lot of adapters. Companies tend to skew one direction or the other, and departments tend to skew one direction or the other, because people tend to hire people who think like them. And it's almost a subconscious thing in an interview. You kind of get the vibe, this, I can communicate with this person. Bad news and good news. The good news is, if a team of innovators or people who are in charge of innovation are all in that sort of strip, good news is that they communicate very effectively, they make decisions quickly, and there's very little conflict. The bad news is their ideas are pretty not usually very innovative or creative, and it doesn't matter if they're here or here. It's the diversity that creates innovation on teams. And unfortunately, the more diverse you are, the more likely it is there'll be conflict. But that's where good leadership comes in. If you have good leadership to manage the conflict, and you'll have great innovation with diverse thinking skills. A rich area. I could talk about this all day, but I'm not going to. Moving on. Spontaneity, I think, is also very important. When I say that creativity can be trained, one of my best experiences in creativity training was with Improv Olympics here in Chicago. Now, I was a stand-up comedian in the 80s, so I thought I knew comedy. But I had to sort of tear down my whole brain to sort of get involved in improv. Because in improv, it's not about thinking. It's about not thinking. And if you're in a scene, an improv scene, and you're thinking, hey, I know what I could do. I could do this. It'd be clever. And blah, 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 blah. It's too late. By the time you have the thought, it's too late. It's moved on already. So I did improv training for 3 years. And what I learned from improv training is that sometimes you have to just not think, and that's sometimes when the best ideas come up. And there are ways to not think in business that are very thoughtful at the end of the day. So here's some suggestions to take home about people. I'm going to give suggestions for all four of the P's. Use assessment measures with your teams so you can see if you have the diversity you need to do innovation. KAI is one. There's another one called Foresight, or foresightonline.com, which is another very good one that determines thinking styles, and it breaks thinking styles down into four types. They're both fairly straightforward, simple, easy-to-take measurements, so highly recommend those. The four styles that Foresight breaks people into are clarifiers, ideators, developers, and implementers. And those are sort of self-explanatory. That's where their strengths are in the problem-solving process. Simple tip, not that easy to do, get the best talent you can. Sometimes people hire like a slew of five engineers when one really good one would do it for you. The Jonathan Ive example is, I think, a good one. One guy made all the difference for Apple. Now, of course, he has support. But get excellence, and it'll make a difference. Whether you have excellent people or not, get them trained because it will make them better. And I could send you academic papers that prove that people who are trained in brainstorming and problem-solving techniques and practice it get better at it. It's very straightforward. They've studied it. It's provable. It's you can take it to the bank. I do idea generation for companies all the time, and it's really interesting to walk into a room where people do it all the time. It's a whole different vibe from walking into a room where people do it once a year. Let me tell you, it's hard work with the once a year types. It is hard work with the once a week do it all the time folks. It's like fun, and it's almost always more productive. Practice matters. All right. Moving along. Okay, so this is the part where most innovation talks we focus on. And I could talk an awful lot about product development, but I'm just going to make a few comments because I don't have enough time today to talk about a whole product development process. But common mistakes that are made in bringing new products to market are not bringing them out on a regular schedule. The company, the Jarvik Heart Company, a medic up in Wisconsin, had a real challenge because they would delay the release of the next version of their product because every couple weeks a salesman would come in and say, stop, don't release that next version of the product because we need to put this one more thing in because the competition is putting one more thing in. And so instead of coming out with a new version of their artificial heart about every 6-8 months, they were coming out every couple of years, and they were losing market share. So one of the disciplines that they, in retrospect, put in place and that worked out for them and sort of turned their game around was to have innovation on a train schedule. And if the salesman came in and said that we need one more feature, they said, sorry, that train's left the station. That release is going out next month. That's it. It'll go in the next one, and that's what you can tell your customers. And so put your innovation on a schedule. Set goals for yourself. We're going to have a new service every 6 months. We're going to have a new product every 6 months. And then organize yourself to make the schedule happen. Incidental product introductions mean that you're doing informal innovation, and it might be okay to do that. It might work out okay. But it probably won't work out as well as if it would is if you got more disciplined and formal about it. People tend to meet deadlines when you set them up, even if it seems like it's impossible to do the thing at the time. Impossible deadlines are things that people complain about, and then they tend to do. So set up your schedule, set aggressive goals, but somewhat realistic goals, and go for it. Idea generation, or brainstorming, should be done based at least somewhat on market research and market insight. In other words, you don't walk into a room in a vacuum and just generate ideas. Before you get there, you should explore what's going on in your marketplace. And you can do that in informal ways, in formal ways, in expensive ways, and inexpensive ways, but you should do it. And then finally, you should do idea generation more often. Design is more important than ever. Pay attention to it. Incremental innovation is the natural tendency, and it's the kind of thing that most organizations are, at least at some level, set up to do. It's disruptive innovation that's harder to sort of put on any kind of training schedule. But look at what Virgin has done. They come out, they get into a whole new business about every 6 months. And sometimes they buy the business to get into that business and put their brand on it, put their experience into it. That's fine. But you need to, if you really want to innovate, you need to think about what the next business is going to be for your business. Or else, your business will tail off as the market tails off for whatever your product is. And then you won't exist anymore. Talking with venture capitalists in the UK over a beer, pub, random venture capitalist right next to me on the beer, having a beer. And he said something interesting. He said that the cycle for companies, the life to death cycle of companies is getting shorter and shorter and shorter. So if you don't reinvent yourself, someone will reinvent what you should be reinventing and will eclipse you and put you out of business. So don't just think about incremental innovation. Do that, but also think about big concept, big disruptive innovation, et cetera. Don't forget about business model innovation. That's one way to be disruptive. Let's talk about culture. At culture wars here in the U.S. And we'll have more before it's all over. Culture is probably the most important of the P's because it influences all of the others. If your culture is right, if your culture is about innovation and about being innovative all the time, it permeates product development. It permeates who you hire. It permeates the processes you use. And if you're imperfect with process, or imperfect with your people, imperfect with your products, the culture will help stimulate those things to improve. So doing culture right is probably, as a leader, where it ought to start for you. So it should be part of all you do. Again, getting to that holistic message. If it's not fun, you're not doing it right. There ought to be something interesting, exciting, and fulfilling about coming into work in the morning for all the people who work for you. If there isn't, if people are just punching the clock, so to speak, then that is a great signal that you're not going to have much innovation. You need for those people to want to stay at work and work late, even if they don't get paid more. And guess what? People will if they're excited about what they're doing. I've been part of three startups, and in two of those three startups, I didn't have any funding at all when I started. And, you know, the people were working literally for peanuts, and guess what? They would sell their car to come into to be able to continue to work for a particular startup if they were really excited about it. People did stuff like that. And then they bought Jaguars when we went public. So, suggestions for getting your culture right. Now, assessment, by the way, is one way to start. I forgot to mention that. Leadership should make innovation a constant topic. One of the ways that Laffley at Procter & Gamble turned around their culture to be more innovative was to bring up innovation, what we're doing about innovation, at every single meeting he was involved in. And he expected everybody under him to do the same thing. And that's how P&G got to be more innovative in the last 5-6 years. You should assess the culture. So you should be talking to people about how they feel about the innovation culture. And you should respect ideas, you should listen to ideas, and you should do something about ideas. Because you can have a great idea culture, but if you don't take action on some of the best ones, well, the message you're sending is it's all bullshit. So at the end of the day, you have to act. You have to take action on some ideas. Process. Innovation is often informal. And there are ways to make it more formal. Innovation is often screwed up, or as I say, hosed, by other formal processes. Like, you know, there was a Business Week, I think, article about how Six Sigma was killing innovation. And yes, it didn't have to, but it was a misuse of a process, and it was a process that was meant for one thing that was made more global than it should have been. In any event, I'm going to suggest a process that you should consider as a sort of company-wide process for handling the complexities of innovation. And that process is CPS, which stands for Creative Problem Solving, which is the more formally known as the Osborne-Parnes model of creative problem solving. It isn't the only process you would use, but you could use it in conjunction with more specific to task processes like Six Sigma or Kaizen. The other thing I'll mention about process is that which you don't write down, in a sense, doesn't exist. As a person, everyone should do their own little bit of idea management on their computer or on a notebook of some kind. If you want to be more creative and innovative all the time, the one thing is to write your ideas down. And as a company, you have to write ideas down too and manage that intellectual property. And I don't understand why more organizations aren't doing formal idea management. I don't understand it. Because I go into companies and do an idea generation session, come up with these great ideas for products and blah, 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 blah. And then somebody says, oh, we thought of that 4 years ago. You did? Well, where's the documentation on that, and why didn't you do it? And when was it reevaluated, and et cetera? And they say, oh, we just forgot. Or the people who developed it left the company. So people should be doing idea management using formal systems. And guess what? It doesn't have to be a big, expensive, $100 million idea management software product. It could be, but it also could be something as simple as a spreadsheet. You know, start somewhere. Start recording your ideas. Start getting them down using the web, using intranets. If you don't have a formal process, and if you don't do idea management, you're leaving innovation to chance. You need to do both of those things if you want to have a formal innovation program. If you don't do those things, you will go out of business eventually because somebody else will be doing them, and they'll beat you to the punch. This is a quick picture. Look, I'm not going to explain this process. If you want to know more about this process, you should buy my book. It's a simple process, really, though. It looks complicated here. It's basically three things. Problem exploration, idea generation, idea refinement, and action planning. I guess that's four. But action, ideation, and exploration. And there's tools and techniques within this process that help you use your imagination in a formal way, help you put spontaneity into a structure. That's what this process is good for. Idea management systems save time and money and help you make more money. It's been documented. Cisco is big into idea management systems, and they're recognizing which of their efforts are making sense, which of them aren't. Experian documented that their growth went from 500 million to a billion because of the use of idea management systems. They attribute it directly to that thing. The value of idea management is not just idea tracking. It's also project management, financial tracking, proof of concept, proof of products. Brightideas.com is one vendor in this space. There are others and other good ones. I'm not saying this is the only guy to use or whatever. It's just one I mentioned. ImagineTech is another that does a good job. And there are others that are sort of lower scale and less expensive, and they're fine too. Start somewhere. That's the point. Do idea management. So adopt a common problem-solving process across all functions. This will allow people to communicate on speaking apples to apples. Get training because it's so effective. It works. If you get training for people in creative process, their creativity and productivity improves. It's documented, it's proven. Why not do it? And then practice it. Practice problem exploration, idea generation, idea refinement, and action planning, and adopt some sort of idea management system. If you do those things, you'll have a more formal innovation process, and it will be more holistic and more effective. So that's the big picture of holistic innovation. So, start a program today. If you have one now, go one better. Improve all four P's. That's a way to ramp it up. Involve everyone, including customers, vendors, outsiders. So embrace the new opportunity that these troubled times are bringing us. So with that, I'll go to question and answers.
First of all, let's thank Greg for coming in. And then we go right into question and answer. Are there announcements? Question and answer.
Okay.
Well,
go ahead.
What you've talked about is really relates to products. What about services? Companies that provide services. A little bit less, well, it's not tangible, so how do you apply what you...
I think everything I just talked about applies to services too. Because it's just a question of adapting these tools and this point of view, if you will, towards the service industry. I mean, people certainly matter in the service industry. Process matters. I mean, you have internal processes for the work you do. You could improve those processes. You could reinvent those processes. What you're selling to customers, often in the service business, is a process. You could reinvent that process. So it all applies to service. In fact, you know, service industry is probably more ripe for reinvention than products are, in some ways, at least as much.
I would say, in some ways, these ideals apply even more in the service sector than they do in the product sector. We're dealing with ephemerals, we're dealing with things that are hard to define, touch, feel. So the ability to go in and innovate there and get people to understand what that means, productize it, becomes all the more important. Most of my innovation career has been in ephemeral services, and this stuff applies to that.
Why don't we go here and then come back over here?
Can you talk a little bit about how you focus this innovation energy? Do you focus it on segments or client segments? Tell me how you do that, because you cure a list of companies up there that are all different. What have you found is the best way to focus that energy within an organization?
Well, it depends, but where I would start is to look at what your customers want and look for incremental innovation. The classic thing of interviewing your customers or doing focus groups with your customers, finding out what their needs are or unmet needs and trying to meet those needs better with your product is sort of the classic first step in terms of new product development for incremental innovation. For disruptive innovation, you should look more for who your customers aren't. So a classic example of that would be Intuit. You know, prior to Intuit and their QuickBooks types of products, average people couldn't even begin to use an accounting computer system. And so they looked at who wasn't using accounting software, and they went to that marketplace to create something completely new and different. So if you're an existing company, you kind of do what Virgin does. You look at adjacent businesses that offer you opportunity to leverage your skills, at least somewhat, and your knowledge, to go into new business areas. And so, you know, if you're in tourism, you look at things related to tourism. Maybe you were in the what used to be known as the travel agent business. A lot of travel agents went out of business recently, right? In the last few years, but the smart people started doing things that were related to that, like organizing tours and organizing experiences for customers. And so if you keep looking and you keep your antenna up for opportunity and you listen to customers and non-customers, you'll see opportunities. Back over there.
There's an old Monty Python bit that says if you want to play the flute, you blow in one end and move your fingers up and down. And to some extent, you talked about innovation on that level, and I'm curious about the experiences that you've had moving from the obviously very effective and very thoughtful recommendation that you make into implementation? How, said differently, how do you get an organization to begin to adopt some of this?
Well, it's interesting you asked that question, because and that relates to the crisis we're in today. Most organizations won't step in anew and get out of status quo until there's an emergency. And that's actually been studied. That Curtin guy that I mentioned in my presentation has done a lot of studies of organizational change. When are people motivated to change? Well, gosh, we've had this product. It's worked great for years. We'll do our little tweaks and improvements on it and whatnot. But we won't do anything really new and different. But then, and so there they are. And then somebody, their competitor, does something really new and different. Now there's urgency about doing something. So it often takes crisis. And so this current business environment we're in is a crisis for everyone. So in a sense, it's an opportunity for everyone to sort of latch onto that and get into innovation. But sort of to more directly answer your question, you have to educate people. If for instance, they're in that status quo mode and there's no big emergency, you have to kind of be like the mentor who guides the drunk person who hasn't hit bottom yet. You have to show them what's going to happen to them in very picturesque ways. You're going to hit bottom if you don't start something. So in other words, you create the emergency, but you create it intellectually ahead of the real emergency. That's how you can motivate. Yes?
I would also suggest there might be a momentum factor that plays in, not just the crisis factor. We go back for a minute to incidental innovation examples that you gave, which was the Motorola Razr. You go through that as a case in and of itself, there's a lot of best practices that got followed there. There's a lot of things that say yes.
Particularly in the beginning.
And so, particularly in the beginning. So, I look at that a little differently. That wasn't necessarily a crisis situation. There were a lot of things that went right, and they had the chance to build some momentum by what I'll call cloning the concept of the team. Literally cookie cuttering it, but just saying, hey, what were the factors at work here? How can we bring this momentum into another part of our organization and use a project to focus the energy? Jeff was asking about how do I focus this?
Mm-hmm.
I think take an initiative, do a project, put those best practices in place, then you could clone it out.
Absolutely.
I think it's always